Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the investors call hosted by Mahindra EPC Irrigation Limited for H1 FY26 financial results. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ramesh Ramachandran, Managing Director from Mahindra EPC. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, and a very good afternoon to all our investors. On behalf of Mahindra EPC, I'd like to sincerely thank all of you for joining this call. Thank you very much for continuing to take a keen interest in your company. As customary in my introduction, I will touch upon key insights and developments in the micro-irrigation industry, our industry outlook, and also some points on your company's preparedness to address opportunities. And following this introduction, we will have our Q&A session. So let me start with a macro view of the micro-irrigation industry in India. We all know that agriculture continues to be the backbone of our nation, engaging nearly 65% of India's population and contributing to around 18% of India's gross value added, GVA. According to the Ministry of Statistics and Program Implementation, the real GVA of the agriculture and allied sector is expected to be 23.9 lakh crores in FY25 versus 23.04 lakh crores in FY24, which is a growth of 3.8% on a very large base. India is also firmly placed as a net exporter of agri products, with exports ranging from $48 to $53 billion annually. However, with 18% of the world's population, India has access only to 4% of global freshwater resources. Agriculture alone consumes over 80% of India's freshwater withdrawals. As per current estimates, per capita water availability in India is expected to drop from 1,545 cubic meters in 2011 to 1,140 cubic meters by 2050, classifying India as a potentially water-scarce nation. Additionally, India is likely to see faster growth rates in the secondary sector, which comprises industries such as manufacturing, construction, electricity, utilities, etc., and also faster growth rates in the tertiary sector, which is mainly the services sector. Now, to support the actual rates of growth and the required rates of growth in the secondary and tertiary sectors, a larger share of water available in India needs to be provided to these sectors. But since there's a natural limit on the sources of water, a lot of the water required for these sectors needs to come from a reduced water consumption in agriculture. This reduction will come from all types of water, surface water, groundwater conservation, recharge projects, but it will also come from what we call on-farm water management. And that includes farm water use efficiency improvement. It is this context that puts micro-irrigation at the very heart of India's sustainability and economic transformation initiatives. Micro-irrigation, in fact, addresses three of India's core goals. One is water use efficiency, two is productivity improvement, and three is doubling farmer income. As I've mentioned in previous investor calls, there are various studies that clearly prove that micro-irrigation benefits the farmer by saving costs such as fertilizer, labor, electricity, all in the range of 20 to 30% savings of cost while improving the productivity by 30 to 40%. With this background, as we look at the potential and the existing penetration of micro-irrigation in India, we see only about 18% penetration of the total identified potential for micro-irrigation of about 72 million hectares. This estimated potential of 72 million hectares is based mostly on groundwater availability and some portion of surface water. If, however, most of the surface water available in India is also assumed to be available for agriculture, then the potential for micro-irrigation doubles from 72 million hectares to 144 million hectares. Given all this, the Government of India has therefore set an ambitious target of 2 million hectares annually, aiming to cover 10 million hectares over the next 5 years. The commitment of the central government is evident from the fact that in the current financial year, FY26, for the first time in history, the central government has issued 43% of its annual fund allocations for the states as month sanctions, and that too just by the month of May 2025. However, for the micro-irrigation industry to fully benefit from this, it requires not just central government push and policy, but also consistent state-level execution, availability of state-level funding, and input cost-linked price mechanisms. It is, in fact, a synchronization of priorities at all levels that will help show a positive impact. Let's now talk about the first half of FY26. This year, as we know, is a year of La Nina effect, and hence the southwest monsoon we all saw. There was an above normal rainfall, 107.9% of the long-term average of the LPA. While this means groundwater availability will be better in the longer term and a better Rabi season for F26, it has, however, posed challenges for the micro-irrigation business in H1 F26. The incessant rains from May as to as late as October impacted micro-irrigation demand as well as installation. Hence, Q2 F26 was affected. But riding on your company's diversification into other revenue streams like irrigation projects, non-subsidy business, as well as a focus on certain key states, your company's revenues grew over the previous year's first half by 17%. In what we estimate as an industry that had a degrowth or at best flattish performance versus H1 F25, your company has registered a growth of around 17% with a revenue of 111.6 crores versus 95.3 crores over a similar period last year. Also, the company has improved its bottom line, delivering a PBT of 1.9 crores for H1 26 versus a loss of 7.3 crores in H1 F25, which is a positive swing of more than 9 crores. This performance was delivered through a combination of, number one, growth in the irrigation projects business, number two, improved performance in certain key states of opportunity, number three, an improved product mix, number four, good commercial discipline, and number five, good cost controls. Raw material prices have been favorable, and during this period, raw material prices were stable. That, along with our strategic sourcing initiatives, have enabled your company to deliver a material cost saving of 0.4% versus H1 F25. The rest of the total 1.7% material cost saving versus H1 F25 can be attributed to the impact of a better mix in terms of businesses, states, and products. For Q2 F26, your company registered a flat revenue of rupees 50 crores versus Q2 F25, which was also 50 crores. However, there was good turnaround in the bottom line, with the PBT for Q2 F26 coming in at 0.6 crores versus a loss of rupees 3.7 crores for Q2 F25. The receivables in H1 F26 were higher versus F25 by about 9.4 crores. This was on account of an increase in receivables during H2 F25, and that's due towards certain opportunity states with longer collection cycles, and the delayed fund release in these states also led to increased receivables. However, it is noteworthy to mention that the receivables in days has gone down by about 6 days versus F25. As mentioned earlier, we do think that the industry is nearing an inflection point. After the challenges and subdued growth in the last few years, some encouraging trends are visible. First, a stable raw material price environment, and though these are not enough to take us to material cost levels that we've seen in the past, such as in financial year 2020, nevertheless, they have been softer in the recent past. The only caveat we would mention here is that geopolitical events could obviously change these things going forward. The second encouraging trend is that we've had successive years of good monsoons, which was the case this year too. And riding on this, we do see a better Rabi season ahead of us. Thirdly, riding on efforts by the government and industry, as well as the visible benefits of micro-irrigation, we do believe that an increased number of farmers are getting aware of the benefits of micro-irrigation, which may lead to improved demand. The fourth encouraging trend we see is an increasing sustainability awareness in urban regions, and that we believe could lead to improved usage of micro-irrigation, and it is likely to improve demand in retail markets as well. The fifth encouraging trend is the policy environment, which is showing some encouraging signs. Let me just list out a few of them. A, the Honorable Prime Minister is pushing for 1 crore hectares to be covered in the next 5 years, which translates to an average of 2 million hectares a year versus 1 million hectares a year of FY25. B, key states such as Andhra Pradesh have requested additional assistance to cover larger area under micro-irrigation over the next 4 years. C, several current active states such as AP, Telangana, Gujarat, Tamil Nadu are active, giving a positive push to the industry. D, the recent GST changes, i.e. the reduction of GST on micro-irrigation from 12 to 5%, is likely to have a positive impact on demand in the medium to long term. And F, finally, multiple ministries are working actively on laying a roadmap and looking at convergence of schemes and policies. For instance, groundwater use efficiency through Atal Bhujal Yojana, the modernizing of the command area development and water management for storage, recharge, and improved water use efficiency. The effect of all of this will be realized in improving area under micro-irrigation in the future, and also including pressurized piping systems in the detailed project reports for major irrigation projects. All these are early signs of a positive environment. However, to unlock opportunity, we also need strong coordination between the central government and the state governments, and we also need the regularizing of fund disbursement. Just to note, as the business environment gets favorable, the industry does show a good growth. Example, during F16 to F20, the industry did register a 20% CAGR. While that is good for the long-term prospects of our industry, how are we as Mahindra EPC geared to tap these opportunities? How are we gearing to tap these opportunities? As we've mentioned in previous calls, your company is learning from the past, and it is working on shock-proofing itself by reshaping its businesses. Just in the last 18 months, the industry has seen many events that have impacted it, such as the election code of conduct, the temporary market impact of GST change, unseasonal and extended rains which imposed challenges, etc. In fact, the industry was a bit subdued and was pegged at 1 million hectares in F25 versus 1.1 million hectares in F24. Despite all these odds, your company has shown a better than industry consistent growth both on top line as well as on PBT. Steadily improving the consistency of the business is extremely important for us, and so we've done a lot of groundwork in the following areas. First, in the subsidy business, we have recalibrated our presence in various states to reduce business concentration risks. Second, as an internal effort to make the growth smoother, we have strengthened processes and defined a tighter commercial policy for optimizing revenue, profitability, and working capital. Third, we've continued to improve cost efficiency and productivity. Just to quote a few examples, manpower cost for F25 was ₹31.8 crores, which is a single-digit growth compared to F20 levels, despite inflation over these 6 years. Also, the manufacturing rejections are at sub-2% levels, which is much better than industry average. Fourth, for a better control over freight and processing costs for the last few years, we've been efficiently managing distributed manufacturing with satellite units, while our main unit continues to be in Nashik. This also has improved our asset utilization. Fifth, we have started improving our coverage in emerging markets such as the north of India, and we have seen some early success in northern states such as UP. Sixth, we have strengthened internal capabilities to address the non-subsidy segments, such as the thin wall business, institutional sales, and small mid-sized irrigation projects. In fact, you will be happy to note that we've reached a 37.8% contribution of the non-subsidy business to the total business in H1 F26 compared to a mere 3% contribution in F20. Today, we've got an unrecognized work order pipeline of 76 crores for irrigation projects. And besides this, we are also exploring export markets in coordination with Mahindra & Mahindra's international operations. As we create a more stable, more consistent, and steadily growing revenue base, we will look at margins. With the improvement in the subsidy business, our margins will improve, particularly through our business in the higher margin states. In the non-subsidy business, meanwhile, as our brand gets established like it has in the subsidy business, we will start commanding a better price and better margins to reflect our quality. As I come to the end of my information sharing session, I would like to briefly touch upon one more point, and that is the M&M parentage of Mahindra EPC. As you know, Mahindra & Mahindra is a blue-chip company with the highest standards of corporate governance and transparency, which we as Mahindra EPC benefit from. M&M also has a strong track record of manufacturing and marketing excellence, which we are benefiting from and will continue to benefit from in the following years. To summarize and conclude, we feel that the micro-irrigation industry will, like any other industry, go through some ups and some downs. But the long-term outlook is very compelling. And in the medium term, we as Mahindra EPC are well-placed to take advantage of both our unique advantages as well as the emerging opportunities in order to deliver above-industry performance. That brings me to the end of my session. Thank you very much for listening patiently. I now open up the session to questions and answers.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may please press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. You may please press star and one to ask questions. The first question is from the line of Aditya Shah from Vikram Advisory Services. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. It's nice talking to you again. I have two questions as of now. I'll take one by one. The first one is regarding, I heard you saying that we have 37% contribution from non-subsidy business. What I would be interested in knowing is that what is the margin of that 37% business and the remaining margin? The second question I'll ask later.
Okay. So, Aditya, there is obviously a difference in the margin of the subsidy business and the non-subsidy business. In fact, there is also a difference in the margin of the subsidy business by states. And as we mentioned in the investor call, the performance that we've had reflects also a good skew in terms of the fact that we have more subsidy sales in the higher margin states in this half. Now, coming to your point, specifically in the non-subsidy business, our margin is lower. However, as we've mentioned in previous calls, we want to grow the business on all fronts. We want to grow in terms of scale. We want to grow in terms of our working capital profile, and we also want to grow the business in terms of profit. So different revenue streams bring different benefits to us. And the non-subsidy business does have a lower margin, but we believe that as the brand gets established in the non-subsidy business, like it has in the subsidy business, we will start commanding a better price and better margins. Does that answer your question, Aditya?
No, sir. My specific point was, what is the contribution to the margin from the 37%? Why I'll ask you is that, let's say, on a quarterly basis, we have a 2.7%-2.8% operating margin for the entire 50 crore turnover. Now, as per my understanding, the subsidy business has a higher margin profile. So from what it looks like, is that we would be losing money in the non-subsidy business currently. Is it true?
No.
And probably for the first 6 months or this quarter. And if not, then why is our margin only just 2.8%? Because if I understand correctly, the subsidy part of the business would be contributing a very high margin considering the material cost.
Yeah. So, Aditya, I just want to confirm that we are definitely not losing money on our non-subsidy business. So, there is definitely no negative impact on our total margin in terms of loss-making because of our non-subsidy business. I just want to clarify that.
Correct. Okay. So, exact number, I can have it later with you, sir. No, I don't need to worry about that. The second question was regarding, as you already mentioned in your brief remarks, is that the debtor days, as in the debtor days were lower, but the absolute receivables increased. So the entire 6 months yielded us a negative operating cash flow. So do you expect the next 6 months to be on similar lines, or would we have a better cash flow in the next 6 months?
We do expect an improvement in the next 6 months. So obviously, the mix that we have of different states impacts us on an ongoing basis. And in the following 6 months, we do expect an improvement because we are seeing a better cash flow. We are seeing better subsidy release. And we think some momentum is definitely building there. So we are positive looking forward to the next 6 months from a cash flow perspective.
Correct, sir. And the third question is that recently, in the last 1 month, we hear in Gujarat that, because of these unseasonal rains, there's a lot of farmers. I forgot the number, but around 11 lakh farmers have applied for a waiver of their loans or interest or something like that. So would these kind of things impact the remaining part of the season, and how much have they impacted our first 6 months?
Yeah, so the impact of, as I mentioned in the investor call, we have been impacted in Q2. You saw that our revenue was similar to what it was last year. And a lot of that is, and it's not just Gujarat, it's different states. And it's not just us, it's an industry-level phenomenon. the incessant rains have definitely impacted the industry, and that is really something that is by way of suppression of demand, suppression of installation, etc. So it's a direct linkage there, and Gujarat is not an exception in that sense. That is a phenomenon that we see across the country. By way of, is there going to be an impact on the fact that there are farmers now asking for some kind of relief from the government?
Yeah.
I think, time will tell. We can't really see any impact right now. But, we'll watch this space carefully because finally it is the state government's decision.
Correct. Okay. The fourth one is that the 37% of non-subsidy revenue is expected to, by the year end, do we expect it to go to 40% for the full year or would remain around the same levels as of now or maybe 45%? For the full year, I'm asking.
Yeah. No, so we think, frankly, that we've done very well to get it to 37%, 37% plus already. And, we would be, so thanks. And we would be hoping to maintain it at these levels for the rest of this year.
Okay. Sir, it's the last question is a bit not on the company, but just the Mahindra Investor Day was celebrated today, and they have shared a presentation on their website regarding whatever their plans are about the future and all of that. So I believe that our business is a part of the FES business in the presentation that they've shared.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is that in any of their presentations, it's never mentioned about our business or they don't see it as a growth gem or as they market other businesses or they have the plans for other businesses of the Mahindra Group. So any reason for them to not showcase our business or where do we find and how is it like what's playing on their mind as a group? Because nothing of our business, either the agri business or anything is mentioned in their presentation anywhere.
Yeah. No, so I think that the fact that I'd like to emphasize is the contribution that Mahindra EPC makes to the group when it comes to...
It's very minuscule right now.
I was about to say something slightly different, but...
No problem.
I'm saying that the contribution that Mahindra EPC makes to the group when it comes to some of the environmental-related aspirations of M&M is unparalleled within the group. And it has the most significant impact on M&M's water positive aspirations, which is a very powerful reason for a responsibly minded company like M&M to be in this business. Now, if I come to the numbers, I think the numbers are what they are. We are obviously a very large group and Mahindra EPC is a business that is smaller in proportion to some of the other businesses, but of course we've got aspirations for growth. I think when businesses get mentioned in the various investor reports, there's always a reason for them to get mentioned. So, what the report looked like a few months ago or a few years ago will be very different from what it looks like in the future. So I would not draw too many conclusions from the fact that this company is not mentioned in whatever you've seen on the website. What I would leave you with is the fact that this has the most significant impact on the group when it comes to some of our environment and water-related aspirations, number one. And number two, we've got a growth aspiration. We've got a scaling aspiration as well. And I'm sure at the right time, We will also be mentioned in these reports for various reasons.
I will be the most happy when that happens, and I'm always positive about it. It's just that right now it feels like a CSR part of the Mahindra Group, just jokingly. I definitely hope for the future, which is very bright, as you say, and in your vision. And definitely I see a point where, you know, all of these things are so important for the farmer, as in doubling of farmer incomes and how it benefits them and the technology with which they can save a lot of money. But it's just that the dependency on the state governments is so deep that, you know, even if the central government wants to do good things, some things just don't happen or takes its own sweet time. So the end, we have, you know, diversified that 37% of non-subsidy, which is great move. And I hope we can sooner reach 50%, and that makes our cash flows and numbers more positive and stable and more predictable, as I had requested in the last call as well. So thank you, sir. I really hope for the future. I trust your vision for the company. Yes, that's it.
Aditya, thank you as always for your excellent questions, and you know, keep engaged with us, and we look forward to working with you together in the for many years to come.
Thank you, sir. I too.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may please press star and one to ask questions. We'll take the next question from the line of Rajan Shah, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, Ramesh ji. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, sir. Sir, I have a few questions, actually. Thank you for the update, actually. In the initial remarks, we got a lot of information. And plus, Aditi also asked you a lot of questions, so many of those have got answered. My questions also, you know, were much similar, so many of them have got answered, but I have still a few questions. Sir, how much revenue actually we lost in the first half because of excess monsoon? 10 crore, 15 crore, if you can get some idea on that, you know, how much exactly we lost, approximately.
Yeah, so I would probably say that, you know, it is better to look at the impact on revenue by days rather than by rupees crores. So, you know, perhaps 15 days to 30 days would be our estimate of the impact on revenue.
Achha, 15 to 30 days, okay.
Yeah.
So maybe approximately about 15 crore or something we can expect we would have lost if normal.
Yeah, it depends on the month, because, you know, the revenues change by month. So, and that is staggered across different months, the impact. It's not all born in one month. So I would you know, I think it would be more realistic to think about it like that.
Okay. So at least 15 days of business we lost, we can take it that way.
Yeah, I would say that there has been an impact, and it's at an industry level.
Okay. Fine. And sir, you said that the subsidy business, a non-subsidy business, was at about 37% in the first half, and it would remain around the same level, approximately around the same level at the end of the year, by the end of the year, current year. So, assuming that even if you do 200 crores of top line in the second half, because last year second half, you did, I think, about 180 crores.
Yeah.
So this year, assuming since you have done 17% growth in first half, so we can expect at least 20% growth in the second half, because things are looking bright. So let's say we clock about 220 crore of top line in the second half. In that case, the subsidy business, non-subsidy business, would be about 37%. So what I want to tell is that, you know, our non-subsidy business is still much lower than what we clocked in 1920, because 1920 we did a revenue of 285 crore and only 3% came from non-subsidy. That was about 10 crore. Let's say 10 crore came from non-subsidy and 275 crore came from subsidy business. where the margins are very high compared to the non-subsidy business. So that 275 crore subsidy business of 1920 will be still much lower in the current fiscal, assuming that you do 37% of non-subsidy sales on a turnover of about 320 crores. Any thoughts on that, sir? I mean, why is it so low even after 5 years? And the industry did 1 million hectares. This year, sir, what is your take like? We'll do 1.1, 1.2. I mean, how much are we expecting? You know? And why is still the subsidy business still much lower than 1920 levels, sir?
So, you know, Rajan, like we've been saying in the last few investor calls, the goal that we have as a business is to show consistent performance, steady performance. Now, that requires us to rebalance our portfolio. We know the dynamics of the subsidy industry. In the subsidy industry, you can grow, but it comes at a cost in terms of your working capital management. As a business, we've got to balance all the key aspects of a business, our revenues, our profits, and our risk. Everything has to be managed. And that calibration requires us to take some calls in terms of how much we push on subsidy business, number one, and how much we push in specific states for subsidy business, because each state also has a different profile. So, you know, I would not necessarily be comparing it to F1920, you know, as if that were the model to be followed. What I would say is that we should look at our business year on year, quarter on quarter, half on half, and make sure that it is progressing in the right direction in terms of these metrics, in terms of top line, in terms of bottom line, in terms of working capital efficiency. That is the way I would look at our business going forward.
Okay. All right. But the point is, sir, as you said, you know, industry is growing and our part of the subsidy business is coming down. Yes, we are doing well on the non-subsidy front, but margins are lower there. So my point is that, you know, group companies like Mahindra Lifespace, Mahindra Logistics, yeah, earlier there was Mahindra Finance, they all came out with rights issue, they raised capital, and they're growing.
Correct.
What is stopping us from doing the same thing? We can also raise maybe 100 crores in Mahindra EPC and take up higher projects, get into a little bit more into aggressively into subsidy business, and we can scale up our turnover and bottom line. My point is that, you know, we can raise a small amount and experiment with little larger projects. Right now we are in 15 crore project, 20 crore project. We can go to 35, 40, 50 crore projects by raising little capital via rights issue or via preferential allotment to Mahindra and Mahindra. See, for Mahindra and Mahindra, putting in 100 crore is not a big thing. They can raise their stake from 54 to 75% and, you know, use this money. So debt also doesn't go up and we get capital and we can aggressively go into subsidy as well as go into little higher projects and scale up our business without resorting to debt. So group companies have done, they have raised 1,500 crores, 750 crores in Mahindra Lifespace, 1,500 crores, I think, in Mahindra Logistics. Mahindra Finance also raised a big amount. So here we are talking about, you know, raising just 100 crores or something, you know, and we can scale up this business. So that is the whole, you know, idea about scaling up, you know. Otherwise, with this capital, we'll not be able to grow as much, because if you see Phenolex Plasun, in 1920, the turnover was X and right now it is 2X. The profit was X, right now it is 2X. So my point is that in the same period, they have also gone aggressively into subsidy business and raised their top line and the bottom line. We can also do that because we are a stronger brand. We are a solid brand. So we should take that benefit of, you know, the parent and the brand and scale it up, you know. Because it's time that now that the industry, because I was on the Jain Irrigation Concord also, they are talking about 3-4 year kind of good growth for the micro irrigation industry, you know. And you also spoke about things happening, you know. So this is the right time to actually infuse some capital and take it to the next level over the next 3-4 years, you know.
Yeah, no, so Rajanji, first of all, thank you for the suggestion. And I think it is always positive to hear investors talking about us raising capital for growth, and that is always an option. So you're right, that is always an option. I'll just give you a couple of comments on the just to make sure that we're all aligned on this. The projects business for us actually is part of non-subsidy. The way when we're talking about non-subsidy, the projects business is part of our non-subsidy vertical, not our subsidy vertical. I just want to make sure that that is clear. Now, having made that clear, the like I said before, M&M has certain definition of what a calibrated business looks like in terms of revenue, in terms of profit, in terms of working capital. And the subsidy business has a certain dynamic. So it is possible for you to grow aggressively in the subsidy business and grow your top line aggressively, but it has a significant impact on your working capital. It doesn't matter how it is funded. The fact is it will have a significant impact on your working capital exposure. And therefore, we have Mahindra EPC being part of M&M Group. We've got to think of how we want to grow this business and have the right kind of balance. Different companies have different ways of growing. So for M&M, we need the right balance between margins and top line and our risk appetite. So I would say that your sense of ambition is very well received, and indeed we also want to grow aggressively, but we would obviously be very mindful of how M&M looks at the process of growing.
Okay, fine, sir. Sir, I had a few small questions actually. What is the business we did in UP, and how much benefit we got because of M&M in the exports market, So if you can give some idea on that.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with the second question first. So we've got a very big tractor business, as you know, and they have a strong presence in many parts of the world, in Africa, for example. And a lot of the opportunities that we receive in terms of export are through the existing relationships that our tractor team has, both with end customers as well as with the trade. So for us, it is an easy way of getting in front of customers in in a continent like Africa. So that is how we leverage the synergy. We work with the M&M international team to identify opportunities, and those help us fill our pipeline. In UP, our revenues are now in double digits, and we expect them to grow further. We would obviously want our foundation to be well established before we go aggressively in new states. Like we've said, we learn from the past, and we want to grow our business in a manner that is shock-proofed. So in a subsidy-driven industry, that is the best way to do it, rather than going too aggressive too quickly.
Okay. And sir, this 1 million hectares which we did last year, the industry did last year, what do you expect in the next 3-4 years? Can we touch 2 million? Is it possible?
Yeah, I think it is possible because there is a lot of optimism in the industry. We have to, as we, when we do planning, obviously we would look at many things before deciding what a realistic growth rate would look like for the industry. The intention of the Government of India is very positive. And as the Honorable Prime Minister has a very, very ambitious target. If you look at the kind of more long-term growth rate, this industry typically is growing between 6-7% type growth rate. If you look at the period that I referred to in the investor call, the compounded annual growth rate was 20% a year between F16 and F20. So there are many different growth rates that one could assume for the future. We would say that there is a good positive momentum right now in the industry. So, we are planning for decent growth in the industry.
Okay. Fine, sir. And sir, my expectation of 325 crore of top line, you think, sir, it can be achieved in the current year? Or is it too aggressive expectation?
You know, Rajat ji, we'll always shoot for the stars. And, whether we achieve it, and I think that's a great number. So thank you for sharing that number with us. It's a great number to look at. And, we'll have to see how the Rabi season plays out. What we are focused on, as I always mention in my investor calls, we don't give forward guidance, but what we're always focused on is on growing faster than the industry. And that is what we really want to do, and we'll keep working on.
Fine, sir. Fine. Thank you so much, and all the best, sir.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Rajat ji.
We'll take the next question from the line of Agastya Dave from CAO. Please go ahead. I'm sorry, sir. Your audio is not clear. May we request you to use your handset, please? Mr. Dave?
Yeah, I'm using my handset. Yeah. Is it better?
Now it's better, sir.
I think it's more a signal problem rather than a handset problem.
Okay.
My compliments to the previous two participants. They asked some very nice questions. The con call has been pretty useful. And thank you to the management as well for answering them in detail. It's very nice to see such level of discourse. Sir, just one question. You mentioned in your opening remarks that you're also looking at exports opportunities. So if you can elaborate a bit more on that, and how do you see export markets panning out over the next, not panning out, but developing over the next 3 to 4 years?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So we are definitely going to look at exports as a potential revenue stream for the company, which diversifies us and furthers this point that you've been hearing about on growing our non-subsidy share of the total revenue. The way exports works is basically we would look at countries where the nature of farming is somewhat similar to what it is in India, and therefore the products that we have can be suitable for those markets. Then, for example, if you look at Africa, we've got certain zones in the world that where this makes sense. Africa is really where we've looked at in the first phase, and we've just about started, so we think there's a lot more that can be done there. Like I said, in terms of how we look at winning business, we do work closely with our international business of the tractor division, who are well established in many parts of the world and who have good on-ground presence. So that is our way of efficiently tapping opportunities. And then when we get to a certain point, then we do the closing and the execution of the deals. So in all honesty, it is something that we have only scratched the surface of in the past, and we'd like to do that more seriously going forward.
So what's the mechanism of sales in, let's say, the African market? Is it, again, government-driven, or is it more private sector-driven? And given that, I'm pretty sure Mahindra has a very nice distribution channel already in place in these countries. So what prevents you, or what has prevented you in the past from really going aggressively there? Because the Indian market has its challenges, as you have been saying. So these are the two questions from my side, and then I'm done.
Yeah. So I'll just answer that. And I think after this, we'll take one more question because we are already over time. And then we'll call the investor call to a close. So it's all a question of priorities. There is obviously a lot of potential in India, and you've heard all the other questioners asking about the potential in India and how we go after it and so on. And you heard my investor call as well in terms of us being a water-scarce country. So it's a question of resources, priorities, and we've got to find the right balance for us as a company. So export will always be interesting. It comes with its own set of challenges. So it's easiest for us when, and hence I mentioned, it's easiest for us when the product market fit is already there and it doesn't have to take too much effort to create that product market fit, because then it'll take away from the focus that we can bring in our home market, which is India. So I think it's about finding that right balance. But, you know, needless to say, we will be going after it, you know, in the coming few years with more effort.
And so the mechanisms are similar. It's again, Africa is again a government-driven market, or is it like more private? Have you?
It's got a bit of both. It's got a bit of both. So, you know, it's not easily classified in that sense. So it's got a bit of both.
Okay.
And, you know, we go for both types of opportunities.
Thank you very much, sir. All the best for the rest of the year. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the last question for today from Jigar Shroff, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I think most of my questions have been answered. And all the best, sir. Thank you so much, Mr. Shroff.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ramesh Ramachandran for closing comments. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. We had an excellent set of questions there, and we look forward to staying engaged with all of you. Speak to you soon in our next investor call. Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, members of the management. On behalf of Mahindra EPC Irrigation Limited, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.